From the Cyber Hub bunker and studio, you're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
What's happening, Mr. Falone? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. What up with you?
You know, welcome to everyone. Zero Trust is on our minds today, but I just want to let everyone know who's probably going to be ticked because they can't find it on Facebook. Facebook banned me yesterday for 30 days from live streaming. If you ask yourself why, I'll tell you exactly why Facebook banned me from streaming for 30 days. And all of my pages, we've got, you know, a few dozen pages that we stream on Facebook through all the different groups. Apparently, posting on my personal account that an ISIS supporter stabbed a Jewish man outside of a synagogue in Switzerland is hate speech. It's just a fact. So, yeah, Facebook and their content moderation team just showing you how smart they really are.
Well, that's not so nice.
No.
Who needs them anyway?
No.
Who needs them anyway?
Yeah. Well, we're on YouTube, LinkedIn, X, and Twitch, Rumble. So we're good everywhere else, and you'll be able to catch this on the back end of your podcast streaming platforms as well as on our Substacks. But we're talking least privilege today, Chris.
Yes.
Well, you know, people hear least privilege, they think access management, but that's just a small piece of a really big pie of the puzzle of least privilege. When you hear least privilege as part of Zero Trust, what comes to your mind?
The first thing that comes to my mind is making sure that the right people have access to the right content at the right time, at the right level. And I think that's where a lot of people forget that least privilege is a framework designed not just for access, but also for availability.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, right? Least privilege is not just access, it's availability, it's data classification, it's understanding, it's really one of the key pillars of Zero Trust, which is you give people the least amount of privilege that you can in order for them to still be able to do their job. And this comes kind of from the contrary of, if you've ever gone to a new company that never really kind of had any sort of understanding of privilege or data access management or even user access management, you'd see 700 admins everywhere you went. Everyone was an admin. And so least privilege kind of stems from the fact that you should really only have two admins. And even then, you know, you should weigh those admins carefully. Then additionally, it's not just those admins, but it's also endpoints. What servers or what applications are talking and what data is being communicated, meaning don't give data that doesn't need to be there. Give just enough is the rule of thumb there.
Yeah, and one of the stories that really illustrates this was back in earlier in my career supporting a bank. As part of my role in the help desk and our transition from on-premise Exchange to Outlook 365, I redid all of the role management for that bank. We sat down and we talked to all the system owners and system administrators to figure out what exactly each title or group of folks needed for each set of applications and rebuilt their profiles from scratch so that they only had access to the applications they needed at the level that they needed so that they could do that. Now, if someone needed an admin access, we would require justification and we would only give them admin access for maybe that day, a couple hours, depending on the situation, but never more than a day. And we'd always pull the access when we were done. And I think that part is also missed out. When people request access, they're just given the access and then left with the access, and then they end up building up too much access over time.
Yeah, you've got to have a time on access, right? Kind of like a vault. And the idea of least privilege really kind of evolves from the idea of what banks and gas stations and so many cash businesses over the years have done with what they call the timed access, right? You can put in your vault code, but it'll take 10 minutes for the vault to open. So unless you're going to hold up the bank or the gas station for 10 minutes, you're not getting any of the money in the vault. You're getting the little bit of money that's in the cash register. That's the risk they're willing to take. Well, least privilege on a kind of a vault timed on the time scale applies the same principles. Why do you need this kind of access, and how long do you need it for? And you time it. And when deploying the right tools in least privilege, once you really time the access, then you really significantly reduce your risk, your specific risk to that data or to that application or to that integration, right? Now, the other idea of least privilege is never trust anything. And so as a general rule of thumb, zero trust is zero trust. We say trust but verify, and that's why you and I do this, Chris. But I don't trust anything. And what I mean by that is specific actions as a CISO, specific actions where I feel like there's going to be a lot of data need to be processed. And it makes me a little bit nervous to see all that data being processed, right? What I might end up doing is when I'm looking at specific data, forcing it to go from a potential server to a VM, limiting that VM's ability to copy, duplicate, or do anything else with the data. Meaning if it's a data scientist pulling data for a report for something for the business, they do it on a VM. None of that data is really stored. The statistics are pulled out. The facts that they need are given. Those are taken away, but then none of that data still sits there. The moment that VM is shut down, that data and that whole work essentially wiped clean so that there's no residue at all. And so you reduce that threat landscape. That's also part of least privilege, right? It's not just who, how, what, and when, but it's how, right? How are they getting it? And then how long does that stay there? And I think that's really important.
And I was talking last night with a group of CISOs, and one of the things that we talked about last night was just-in-time access. I think one of the really cool evolutions over the past couple of years is the automation of just-in-time access creation for individuals based on a case or something that you're working on, where it gives them the right access to the right system at the right time for that duration. So that's one of the really cool evolutions. And then it tears it down, so it doesn't have to be done manually, because we all know admins forget, people forget. So that helps us with our job for that. But before we continue, we're streaming live on LinkedIn, X, not Facebook, and Twitch, other platforms. So ask your questions. We get them here. We'll answer them for you. We're happy to help you better understand this concept. Before we continue on, a really good book that I have to rep is Project Zero Trust. And this just
by like George Feeney.
By George Feeney, just like the Unicorn Project and other books that have been written in a similar fashion. This kind of goes through the process of zero trust in a really understandable way through storytelling. So highly recommend that book if you're going down your zero trust journey. And that also will allow you to see through some of the marketing jargon of companies claiming that something is zero trust, but it really isn't, or it might only address part of your zero trust journey and not give you zero trust all of a sudden, like some of them claim to do.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about zero trust that you have to understand is you've got to understand the seven pillars that stand behind it. The NSA this week kind of released their own little way of trying to address zero trust. And I felt like that was really, really, really effective in kind of the way they talk about zero trust being adopted in specific places and situations. The second piece to when you look at zero trust and least privilege is you can't start this journey without understanding how your business operates and how the different departments within your business operate. Meaning it's great to put least privileged access as part of your project, and it's really effective to do so. But if you're not taking into consideration, how does my company make money? How do all of these different business units, DevOps, apps, applications, marketing, sales, strategic alliances, executive leadership, finance, legal, how do they all interact and support the vision of making money? Then you're going to fail miserably at least privilege, because the only way to effectively design least privilege, the only way to effectively design it is to understand how different organizations interact with the data, and then how that data supports those different business units. And then that goes to your supply chain, because least privilege doesn't only apply internal, it also applies external. Who are your partners? What do they need to access the data? You know, oftentimes we see that really kind of clash with marketing, because marketing's like, we want to export all this data to run an ad campaign with this agency. And you go, all right, we need their security. And all of a sudden you realize it's an ad agency with five people and they run their own Google space and they've got some SaaS program and they introduce a whole slew of risks, and you're finding yourself having to stand on a hill and either die on it, battle it, and whatnot. Because now the idea of least privilege, zero trust comes into play, but you're also impacting business productivity and achievement of business goals. Chances are the people in marketing knew what they were doing. They went to an agency. They wanted to say, here's the things we want to do. Here's why we need to be able to do it in order to generate the revenue, in order to generate the ROI the company needs. And so you have to come with a different way of, there's got to be a different approach here. And this is the soft skill side of least privileges, because there's the technical side and there's the soft skill side. And the soft skill side is really, really important. You really want to kind of understand and build a support around those needs for the business in order to do that. Because once you do that, then you win. Right. I mean, that's just a no-brainer.
And one of the things that I'd add to that is, as a security professional, your role is to understand what the business is doing to generate revenue, and then how can you best protect the application or the process in which that you're generating revenue from other external factors, so that they can still generate the revenue without the negative impact of those external factors. And that's another aspect where least privilege comes into play. For example, if you're storing items on a server, you shouldn't be sharing that with the general public unless they specifically needed access to it. So for example, this PDF that I just shared, if it were not supposed to be shared, you shouldn't have it available for search engines to index and for people to randomly find it. You want that behind certain content gates or certain permissions of who can access it, when can they access it, and the reasons for them to access it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is something that I think is very very important, which is when you look at least privileges, is not only who has access to the data or who needs access or how that data is accessed, but there's another part to this that's beyond data, I think, right? And you think of how modern security is approached today. We look at, you'll see information security be one thing. You'll see data security be another, right? And how do you separate information from data? Are they not the same? Is data not information and information not data? And you go, well, where do you draw the line and what does that mean? And so you've got to look at this in the way business is kind of built and designed. And typically different divisions carry different data and they introduce different risks to the organization and requires different roles to sit in different spots. And when we step away from the data aspect of least privilege and we just strictly focus on the idea of least privilege, least privilege to me is supposed to be something that when implemented correctly, it's architected correctly, it's scoped correctly. And then when it comes into that idea of executing, it's done in a way where no one knows they're getting least privileged.
Because it just works.
It just works. Security by obscurity. When people don't know, the one thing I've always despised with security partners is they say protected by so-and-so. I don't want that. Don't want to see it. I don't want my people to see it. I don't want anyone to see it. I don't think they should know who they're protected by.
No, because that exposes information to a threat actor that they could see, and they could then discover the vulnerabilities in those systems in order to try to attack the organization. The other thing, when it comes to that, so there's the data field that you have to protect, there's the identity field for people and machines that you have to protect, and then there's the application plane that you have to allow everything to flow together for it to just work.
Yeah. To get it to that point, I think we oftentimes forget that when you step away from when you're trying to run a business, and that's what security is. Security is a business enablement. And you hear a lot of people talk about it today. That's a hot topic. They go, yeah, we got to enable business. You know, I was at a panel two weeks ago. I forgot when it was. I can't tell time anymore. I was on a panel and you know, a few of the talking heads on stage were, yeah, you know, we're business enablers. Okay. Audience question. How does security enable business? And you get generic responses. So I want to give you beyond the generic response. How does security enable business? You don't exist to the business. The business knows that they have access to what they need in the way they need it without having to jump through 500 additional hoops. Nothing is worse than forcing your users to go through 500 hoops in the name of security. That's not helpful, right? That's not helpful at all. What it does is it creates antagonism and shortcuts. And people, whenever people are confined to a box, they will always look for shortcuts. Whenever you put them through a route that requires them to jump through too many loopholes, through too many hoops, to go through a maze to get to where they need to go, they're just going to go around your maze in one way or another. Give you a prime example. I'm a Mac user. I only use Mac. Almost everyone who knows me knows this. I don't have a Windows device. However, my last several employers were all Windows shops with no Mac support. And so they sent me a MacBook. They sent me a Windows device and not a Mac. And you know what that Windows device did? It collected dust. It did nothing. I went right around everything they did. I reinstalled everything on my personal Mac devices. And that's how I worked. And then I'd show up to an in-person meeting because we've all been remote for so long. And they'd be like, how'd you get a Mac? I go, you didn't get me a Mac. It's my own Mac. Well, how is it all working on your own Mac? We don't do Mac support. I go, you don't, but all of our applications do. Go ahead, Chris.
I was reading a book called Security Chaos Engineering, and the second chapter in that book focuses on all the things that users do to get around the controls or the limitations that you put. And as a security program, you shouldn't look at that as they're trying to break the system. You should look at that as they're making the system more resilient by finding ways around the things that you thought were secure. Why? Because they've adapted to the environment and found an easier way to do it, which means the loops you were sending them through aren't effective, don't help them. You have to provide them with that path that makes it easy to do, and look at the things that they do as, oh, these are adaptations to the environment that we need to consider in order to help the business function effectively.
Yeah, you've gotta be able to step away from it. The best example of security by obscurity I can give you, and this applies to least privilege, directly applies to least privilege, and no one I think does it better than the Israelis at Ben Gurion Airport. So if you've ever flown in and out of Israel, you'll notice that flying in, security is almost non-existent. Flying out, there's layers of securities, but you only see really one, two of them, and that's it. And here's how it works. When you're driving into the airport, they've got a checkpoint. It's an armed checkpoint with armed guards that check every single vehicle going in, right? They'll speak to the occupants of the vehicle, etc., kind of scoping them out. From that moment on, that's the last time you'll ever see an armed guard at Ben Gurion Airport. The rest of the route, as you're driving into the terminal and getting into the terminal, no armed guards, no nothing. It's not like here where you see, you know, armed TSA agents or Homeland Security or cops or all of that. Nothing. When you walk to the terminal, they've got magnometers that are there, right? You go through the magnometers, there's an armed person there as well. Now, once you walk into the terminal, you don't see anyone. Nothing. Nothing in the terminal at all. Not a soul with a weapon at all. However, the guards are there. They're all there. There's a ton of security there. You'll never notice it because they're dressed like travelers. They're walking around with luggage and backpacks, and they just look like anyone else at that airport. So if you're a bad guy trying to do something bad, when everyone's wearing a uniform, you know exactly where to go first. If you've ever seen a bank robbery movie, what's the first thing they do? To go to the security guard at the bank, right? Take out the security guard. Then we can take over the bank. Can't do that at Ben Gurion Airport because you can have one or you can have 50 people there that are security, and you'd never know it until a bullet goes through the back of your head, right? Because that's how fast it is. Additionally, second part to that, I've got snipers sitting in strategic locations. You don't see them until you decide to act a fool, and they've got snipers, right? Then when you're incoming, by the way, they've got armed guards in different areas of the airport, but you won't see them. They look like travelers again. And that to me, folks, is zero trust, least privilege, right? You as a traveler don't need to know who the security guards are. As a deterrence, think of perimeter security, network security, all of that. You need to have some sort of WAF. You got to have some sort of access management restrictions, you know, specific tunnels to get people in. That's the security they see. And then they don't see any of the other defense in depth and pillars and layers of your security. You're making them guess. The moment you make adversaries guess is the moment you increase your chances to identify their actions, because now they've got to trigger an action to get a reaction in order to understand what's there. And once they trigger an action, if you approach that action correctly, then you've got it. Then you know, you've successfully identified what's happening in your environment. And that folks, is the best way to explain least privilege, zero trust, in a way where you go, not even the employees at the airport know who the security people are. They could see familiar faces, but then again, the shifts and the rotation and the stuff is, you know, and Israel's landlocked. So the only way out of Israel is through the airport, and there's only one airport. So if you see the same face three times, that's not weird, because there's no other way to leave the country but to go through that airport. I hope that made sense.
Well, that brings us to the bottom of the hour. We have a couple minutes left. If we have any questions, we'll take them. But if not, next week we'll be tackling the next pillar of zero trust, which is?
Whatever you want it to be, buddy. Whatever you want it to be. Do we want to talk about users? Do we want to talk about, I know, whatever you want it to be.
Let's talk about users.
Let's talk about users next week. Yeah, let's do that. We talked about least privilege today. Part 3 will be around users. Go check out Chris's Substack. Check out my Substack. Chris, your Substack is CPF Coaching?
Yes.
CPF.substack.com.
Yep. And I'll share the links for it. You can find it on my LinkedIn profile.
It's also in the notes.
Yep.
It's also in the notes. So check out his Substack, check out my Substack, jamesazor.substack.com. Subscribe. We're going to create our own YouTube channel and kind of a playlist for our content. We do these episodes right now. It sits in two different places, so you can catch it there. Eventually we'll get it all under one. I think we're just trying to get some decent
traction there. Put
it up. Yeah.
And in the meantime, send us questions. If you have a topic that you want us to cover, reach out to James, myself. Send us questions and we'll cover them in one of the future episodes.
All right. Well, Chris, have a great weekend. Everyone for listening, watching. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend and we'll see y'all next week.
Thanks all.
Bye.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.